25. Yeah. Daf Chof Hey. Page 25 of Masechet Shabbat. And we're talking about burning. We're talking about burning contraband. So this Mishnah, which is talking about the burning or incineration of things which were once supposed to be used for a holy purpose, but they became defiled. So the Mishnah began by talking to us about using something like that for Yom Tov. For example, shemen, oil, is a direct derivative of olives. And olives that grow in the Holy Land have to be set aside in a special manner. The first portion set aside, approximately 2% or so, is given to the Kohen. And that's holy. And oftentimes the Truma would not be given in the form of olives, but rather in the form of olive oil. Because olive oil is considered to be superior than the olive, as wine is superior to the grape. Not so with other fruits or vegetables. But when it comes to grapes, when it comes to olives, the liquid that is produced from it is considered far superior to produce. Produce you buy in a supermarket. Wine you have to go to the LCBO.
In Canada.
But the point is, it's something different. It's not, you don't spend pennies or even dollars. That costs a lot more money. Oil costs money. Wine costs money. So if the wine becomes ritually defiled, what would happen? You have to get rid of it. What if the oil becomes ritually defiled? You have to get rid of it. The big difference is you cannot ignite wine, although wine ignites many people. But you can you can ignite the olive oil. So in the Mishnah it said that you're not allowed to light, you're not allowed to kindle the lamps on Shabbat or Yom Tov with olive oil that has to be incinerated because it's truma that became ritually impure. So the Gemara begins its observation. B'yom Tov hu da'asir. When is it prohibited? On Yom Tov. Ha'b'chol. However, if this would be during a weekday, not on Yom Tov, so then shapir domi. Then it's okay. So what's so meaningful about that? What's so meaningful about saying that the olive oil can't be incinerated on Yom Tov, but it can be incinerated during the weekday? What's so meaningful about that?
The purpose of the incineration on Yom Tov is not for Yom Tov. The purpose of the incineration on Yom Tov, if it would have been done, would have been for the purpose of incineration.
What was the Mishnah? What was the Mishnah talking? What was the Mishnah talking about when it referred to its non-permissible use on Yom Tov? Lighting what? Lighting candles, lamps, right, to be more accurate. In a time that there was no electricity, which used to be the time till fairly recently, how did people see their way around?
With candles.
So may you bask in the glow of the fire that's being fueled by something that's contraband, that's prohibited. May you bask in its glow. You would say no.
It depends. Of your lighting it. That's the question is what the purpose is of lighting.
One at a time, 1 second. Very good. So Felix is right in saying that there's a distinction whether it's lit for a holy purpose or a mundane purpose. But it's not entirely correct what you're saying. Because the Shabbat candles or the Yom Tov candles or lamps are lit for a holy purpose, to usher in Shabbat. And the reason that they're lit is that we should bask in its glow. We should benefit from it. If a person were to have Shabbat candles and not benefit from them, they would be pointless. In fact, if you light the lamps of Shabbos, the Shabbos candles, in a place where nobody will benefit from it at all, you're not even allowed to light it. Didn't accomplish anything. Really, really, we're supposed to light it where we eat. It's a problem. Like this week, you have a Shabbaton, right? Where do you light the candles? But since you come home, and you might eat something anyway, and then when you come home, you need to see a way around, so it still serves a purpose. So on Yom Kippur, for example, we light up a Yahrzeit candle. Where do we light these Yahrzeit candles? We usually light them in a place that's inconspicuous, where nobody will benefit from it. There's a whole discussion if, like, the shyness of once upon a time, people would, a woman would have to go to the mikvah on Friday night, so she would want to light Shabbat candles in the shul, so that way she could take a horse and buggy. It was easier for her to come to the actual Beit HaKnesset, instead of coming herself later at night. So the halacha says that if there is a chazan or a shamash that sleeps in the shul, it would be permitted. And that it was very common those days. The caretaker would actually sleep in the shul. In other words, somebody has to use it for living purposes. That's the whole idea. On the other hand, Felix is right, because we know that when we kindle the menorah, or the lamps that celebrate Hanukkah, we make a very bold and very clear statement. Haneris alalo, kodesh heim. And what is the definition, the meaning of kodesh heim? Ve'ein lanu reshus lehishtamesh bahem. We have no permission to utilize them. Elo lir'oisen bilvad. We can merely gaze upon them, but we cannot bask in them. So to bask or to enjoy the light is something which we're not sure. You can or you can't. So when we're not sure of what to do, one of the methodologies we use is we analyze the Mishnah carefully, because the Mishnah is our bedrock of halacha. And when we analyze the Mishnah carefully, we learn what the Mishnah says, and we also learn what the Mishnah doesn't say. And sometimes what it doesn't say is even more meaningful than what it does say, because the Mishnah speaks to us in many ways. So if we have a Mishnah that tells us that you can't light Shabbat and Yom Tov candles with Shemen Sreifa, with this olive oil that has to be destroyed. Why? Because it's ritually impure. Can't do it on Shabbat. Can't do it on Yom Tov. So why not? Why not? What's wrong with doing it on Yom Tov? After all, on Yom Tov, you're allowed to use fire. And we explained, you're only allowed to use fire for personal benefit that is in the form of oichel nefesh, where there is ingestion involved, where you're actually going to eat it. It's used for cooking. But if it's not for cooking, if it's just fulfillment of a mitzvah, that's not okay. Okay, so Yom Tov, I can't do it. How about doing something like that on a Monday or a Wednesday? That's not Yom Tov. So it's not Shabbat or Yom Tov. When I light those lamps, I will benefit from them. In the Mishnah, there's no problem with that. The Mishnah's issue was incineration for non-edible purposes. If it's not culinary, if it's not going to help you manufacture the meal that celebrates Yom Tov, so then in that case, you can't use incineration, you can't use fire on Yom Tov. Ah, so the Mishnah reasons now, the Gemara reasons. B'yom Tov, hu da asur lahadlik? Ha b'chol, but if it would be a weekday, shapir dami, that would be fine to kindle or to light. What does that tell us? It tells us that I can bask in the glow of that which is being burnt because it's contraband. You understand the chiddush here? Understand the novelty? This was supposed to be eaten. Now it's defiled. So instead of a mitzvah to eat it, it's a mitzvah not to eat it. And because it's a mitzvah not to eat it, what should I do with it? So Torah says, burn it. Destroy it, burn it. I said, oh, okay, so I can't eat it. But can I eat something else by its candlelight? That's the question. And the Gemara reasons, it would seem, yes, that that's permissible. But Yom Tov hu da aser, on Yom Tov, because there's a question of using incineration for non-culinary purposes, and that's what's prohibited. It says Moshe Yadaber Velikim Yanenu Bekoil. Moshe was speaking and there was an echo coming back. I have Facebook coming back at me. So the Gemara says, my time, what is the reason? Meaning, from whence do I know that this is actually permissible? Now, mind you, we don't know that it's not permissible. But there's this thought that if it's prohibited, if it's contraband, we probably shouldn't be benefiting from it. It's just a thought. We assume. Now, actually, the Gemara is going to bring soon an example of something that has to be burnt from which we may not benefit from. And that's called Maaser Sheni, and we're going to get to that soon. So there is precedent for things that have to be burnt, and because they have to be burnt, they can't be used. What's the thing most of us tend to conjecture up in our minds when we say of a mitzvah of burning? What's the thing most?
Chametz.
Why do we burn the chametz? So it should be totally destroyed. Don't be there. Yeah. Can we benefit from chametz?
No.
No? So.
Which means we can't benefit from the light of
you would chametz. Think. You certainly can't benefit from the light of chametz. If you have chametz, can you light up? Can you light your house with it? Absolutely not. You know, it goes so far that there are a lot of people who have this custom of not drinking milk on Pesach, which makes no sense. What could be wrong with milk? And the reason is because in their village, what would happen is that it was fresh milk.
So they fed the cow
chametz. And the cows being fed chametz, ultimately you're benefiting from chametz on Pesach. So what would they do? So you say, what's the problem? Buy the milk before Pesach and put it in the fridge. 78 years ago? How long could milk last? A day? Not more than a day. So therefore, there was no milk on Pesach. You got that?
It's the same problem with the meat.
It's the same problem with the meat.
Or eggs.
You're right.
Meat especially.
Eggs actually do have a little bit of a shelf life, even if they're not well refrigerated. And meat, they used to slaughter that day.
Yeah, but in order to make that meat, the cow had a month or 2 months before that to eat chametz.
The cow eating chametz a month before is not a problem. That chametz is long gone by the time Pesach comes. The problem with the cow eating chametz on Pesach. Understand?
The chametz is still there.
No, the chametz is not there. The chametz is more changed than even during burning. The chametz has turned into something else. The problem for us is when it will be fed chametz on Pesach. Simply stated, one cannot feed their animals chametz on Pesach. Not because your dog is Jewish. You know the story with the guy who wanted, they should say Kaddish for his dog?
No.
He came to the rabbi, he said, say Kaddish for my dog. Make a kelim l'rachamim too. The rabbi said, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. He's like, I can't say Kaddish for a dog. I mean, I'm sorry a dog died, but the guy said, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to take my $100,000 contribution down the block to the Reform Temple and they'll say Kaddish for my dog. The rabbi said, 1 second. You didn't say your dog is Jewish. So the truth is that your dog is not prohibited from eating chametz. But you are prohibited from benefiting from chametz. And because if you were to use dog food, you would save you money, and it's maybe more expensive to give the dog non-chametz food, who's benefiting from the chametz? You are. And because you are, you're not allowed to feed the dog chametz on Pesach. Okay, but let's leave the dog and the goldfish alone for a moment. Let's go back to our issue here. There's this assumption that something which would have to be burned should probably not be benefited from either, because it's got to be destroyed. So if destruction is necessitated, probably it means it's got to be totally off limits, that we shouldn't be benefiting from it. That's the implicit assumption of the Gemara. So the Gemara begins to respond. Amar Rav, or others maintain it's really Rava. Kishem shemitzvah lisreif hakadoshim shenitmu. Just as it is a mitzvah to burn things which are supposed to be used for the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is called the house of, what does Mikdash mean? holiness. Mikdash is a permutation of the word Kodesh or Kadosh. So the things that are brought as offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, what are they known as? They're called Kodshim. Kodshim. So the Rav says, just like it's a mitzvah to burn Kodshim. Shenitmu. Kodshim Shenitmu. Give me an example of Kodshim Shenitmu. You have Kodshim, they became Tomei. I'll give you an example, okay? So you and a bunch of other people got together, and we're going to bring a korban, a special offering, in honor of the holiday called Pesach. And then you're going to take that meat and bring it back to wherever you were going to be celebrating Pesach, having your Seder, and you kind of scrimmage the area off, because that's what you have to do at the korban Pesach. You say the korban Pesach may no longer be taken out of this area, has to be taken in this particular area, whether it's a home, whether it's an area which is some kind of demarcation. And here we're going to eat together, we're going to celebrate Pesach. That's nice. It's really nice. And tragedy strikes. Here's all these families gathered, and everybody's going to celebrate Pesach. And Nebuch, old Uncle Maris, who's somehow 100 years old, has a heart attack in the middle of the Seder and he dies. This could happen, God forbid. So what happens to all of the people who are now in the same room when the guy suddenly dies on them? They're all tummy. And what happens to the korban or the kachim that was on the table? It's puzzle. What do you do with that korban Pesach? You burn it. You understand? That's kachim shenitmu. That's an example of kachim that becomes defiled. So the Gemara says, Kishem shemitzvah lisreif hakachim shenitmu. Just like it's a mitzvah. A mitzvah means a sacred duty. Just like it's a sacred duty that we have to burn the kachim shenitmu, kach mitzvah lisreif esatruma shenitmeis. So too, it's also prohibited from destroying, from so too it's a mitzvah. It's a sacred duty to take the truma, which is that which is separated from the grain or the harvest of the land of Israel, given to the Kohanim, and is supposed to be eaten in a state of purity. The Kohanim have to be pure, and the truma has to be pure. And if the truma becomes tamei, then it has to be burned. Okay, what are you trying to say? What's the point? So the point is that there is a mitzvah to burn this. And because there's a mitzvah to burn this, we weren't allowed to use it or burn it on Yom Tov. Because as we learned, on Yom Tov, one is not permitted to kindle a fire for purposes other than ochel nefesh. And so v'amra teira, the Torah says, v'shas b'yura tehonei. At the time it's being burned, it can be derived, pleasure can be derived from it. You can bask in the glow. So the Gemara introduces, this is like a whole circuitous way, the Gemara has never even answered its question. The Pnei Yeshua says that the Gemara is trying to explain why it's actually prohibited from burning on Yom Tov. Listen carefully to what I'm going to tell you now. Listen carefully. Do you light Shabbat candles on Shabbat when it's Shabbat already?
No.
No, when do you light Shabbat candles?
Before Shabbat.
Before Shabbat. How about Yom Tov? May you light Yom Tov candles on Yom Tov?
Yes.
Yes? You can light it on Yom Tov.
Yeah.
After the first day comes out.
After the first day comes out, the second day is still Yom Tov. And I'll tell you another little secret. In theory, if you have a pre-existing flame, you can light the candles even on the first night of Yom Tov too. You can do that. Why? You eat candles? No. So why can you do that? The answer is because when it comes to using fire for Eichel Nefesh, it says, Kishem Shehutra, just like it's permitted to use it for actual eating, it's also permitted for things that are related by extension. So by extension, it would not be very convenient or comfortable to eat in the dark. And because we're eating in the dark, or we have candles, which ruins the ambiance, it just feels like a regular Tuesday night, doesn't feel like a Yom Tov, so therefore, we're allowed to light the candles on Yom Tov. The reason you have to wait for the first day of Yom Tov before you light it on the second day of Yom Tov is because the first day of Yom Tov is biblical, and the second day of Yom Tov is rabbinic, and a smaller holiness should not eclipse a greater holiness. So one second. If I'm allowed to light candles on Yom Tov, and the reason is because I'm going to bask in its glow, and if you're telling me I'm allowed to bask in the glow of contraband that has to be burnt, why can't I light the Shemen Sreifa on Yom Tov? The answer is, because the Shemen Sreifa, the kindling, is not in order to get light. Why am I burning it? Because it has to be burned. Whatever pleasure, desire that's derived, pardon me, or whatever basking is done, is only secondary. And that, says the Pnei Yeshua, is what we establish here. First of all, it is a mitzvah. And if a person has an opportunity to do a mitzvah, so the mitzvah becomes front, right, and center. Because it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to eat matzah. It's a mitzvah. What if I don't like the matzah meeting? What if it's not the thing I enjoy eating? Does it make a difference? No. What if I enjoy the matzah? Does it make a difference? No. Whether I enjoy it or not does not detract from the mitzvah, because what the main focus is, the mitzvah. So if I'm lighting or kindling this for the purpose of trying to destroy it, because it's a mitzvah to destroy it, even if I might be basking in some of the light or glory, it still becomes overridden by the fact that I'm doing a mitzvah which is not permitted on Yom Tov.
But then the question comes, if the oil was defiled several days before Yom Tov, can you now keep it to use it on Yom Tov? And by this argument, it would not be possible.
That exactly was the case, that it was defiled days before Yom Tov. And this exactly was the question. Can I use that oil to light my Shabbos candles or Yom Tov candles? And the answer was, no. I am benefiting. I am enjoying.
I'm specifically speaking of Yom Tov.
Yeah, of course Yom Tov. I am enjoying it. Yeah, but the enjoyment is secondary. Why? Because this is a mitzvah. And when something that I'm doing is a mitzvah, so the power of the mitzvah becomes overriding. And everything else takes second fiddle, because I'm doing a mitzvah. But I can benefit. So the Gemara says, one second, you never answer my question. Where do you get that from? You just said, the Gemara says, this exactly was our question. Hey, Chan Amra Torah, where does the Torah say this? Where does the Torah say that it's permitted for us to benefit and enjoy from something that has to be burnt or incinerated? Let's take a look in Rashi before we go to the answer. Rashi says, "Ho b'chol shaper dami, during the week they will be permitted." Permitted what? Le'is hanayo minei, to enjoy, to derive pleasure from it. Mitzvah lisreif esatruma shenitma, I'm allowed to burn the truma that became tamei. Listen carefully to what Rashi says. Dedumya lekodesh, because truma is like kodesh in that it's sacred, set aside for a holy purpose, has to be consumed only when I'm in a state of ritual purity. Rashi adds, the oid mishum takola. Another reason to burn it is not just because it's like kodshim and kodshim have to be burned, but because exactly it becomes a stumbling block. What happens if you leave it around? What happens if you leave it around? Somebody ends up using it. You're then allowed to leave it around. We have many halachas like this. Do you know that it's not permitted for a person to use false weights? False weights and measures. Yeah. How about keeping false weights in the house? Not using them, just keeping them in the house. You're not allowed to. Why? False weights. You know, once upon a time, people used to weigh things down. They would have a scale, and they would like put weights on one side. Okay, but nobody really uses it. And then, so if you want to know how much flour you had, you put a pound on this side, and then you give enough flour until it balanced. That's how we know how much it was. So what if I'm a very sly shopkeeper. My weight says a pound. My weight says a pound. But in fact, it's only 3/4 of a pound. So I'm busy selling you a pound of flour, but really it's only 3/4 of a pound. And I charge you for a pound. What do you say? It's good business, huh? It's good business. It's called geneva. It's called theft. Well, not only does the Torah prohibit theft, the Torah says not to keep the weights around. Why? Because if you keep the weights around, somebody ends up using it. What do you have to do with those weights? You got to destroy them. Because if you destroy the weights, nobody will use them. Here I have shemen oil, which is truma. But it's shemen truma, which is defiled, nitma. What should I do with it? Get rid of it. Why should I get rid of it? Rashi says, mishum takola. The Tosfos analyzes this Rashi very carefully. You know what the Tosfos says? He says, why did Rashi bring two reasons? What's the difference between reason A and reason B? And the Tosfos says, simple. If I must burn it because kodshim have to be burned, because it's a sacred duty to burn these things, so I have to burn it, But if I'm destroying it so I don't end up benefiting from it, well, in that case, why does it have to be burnt? What if it's crumbed? What if it's thrown into the high seas? What if it's put into some kind of solution that makes it dissolve? As long as nobody can get their hands on it and do the wrong thing. So there's actually a difference in these two reasons. Reason A, I specifically have to burn it. Reason B, get rid of it any way you please. By the way, since we talked about chametz, let me just tell you that there's a machlokes, there's a dispute in the Talmud, whether you have to burn the chametz or you can simply just get rid of it. Do you know what the halach is? You can simply just get rid of it. You don't have to burn it before Pesach. It's only that once Pesach comes and the chametz is still there, that's when you have to burn it. However, having said that, when we're in a situation on Erev Pesach where we cannot burn the chametz, when is that? Erev Pesach, which is Shabbos. So it's a real problem, Erev Pesach, which is Shabbos, because we have to make a bracha on two loaves. We have to eat Suda Shabbos. So we have to eat Suda Shabbos very early in the morning for two reasons. First of all, you're not supposed to eat on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. But furthermore, how will you make Lechem Mishnah? You're thinking, what's the problem? Matzah. No, you can't do that. You're not allowed to eat matzah Erev Pesach. So that when the matzah is eaten at night, you should actually be eating it with some kind of gusto. We don't eat matzah for a whole month before. So you're not allowed to eat matzah Erev Pesach. What are you going to use to make Lechem Mishnah? The answer is two little challahs. But how will you get rid of the crumbs? You're going to lick the table? The answer is you shake it out into the wind, or you flush it down the toilet. And that's good enough. So when it comes here to the Shemen Sreifa, if I pour it down, something which will destroy it, I pour it down, I don't know, an area where nobody goes, is that good enough? And that would be the difference. If it's Dumi L'Kedesh, it specifically has to be burnt. If it's to burn it. If it's not Dumi L'Kedesh, if it's just because of Takala, burning is one of many ways, but certainly not the only way. At any rate, let's go now on to the answer. So the Gemara answers, do you know I know that I'm allowed to bask in the glow? I'll tell you how. I know it mid Rav Nachman. Thank Rav Nachman for this one. Not from Uman, it's a different Rav Nachman. This Nachman is from the times of the Gemara. This Nachman says, the Amar Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman says, Amar Rabba Baravua said, Amar Kro, the Pasuk says, and the verse we're about to read speaks about what? It speaks about Truma. And it says, Va'ani, and I, God, Hini Nisat Al-Ghaz Meshmeres Trumoisoi. I have given you the watch of my Truma. No, it doesn't say Truma. It says Trumoi. Trumoisoi. Trumoisoi is Truma is single, Lashon Yachid. Truma Isai, or Truma Toi, is plural. Well, how many Trumas do you have? Last time I checked, there's only one kind of Truma. There's only one kind of Truma a Kohen could benefit from, and that's kosher, pure Truma. Comes the Gemara and says, the Nachman taught, B'shtei Truma Isakas of Medaber. The verse clearly alludes not to one, but to two kinds of Truma. How could there be two kinds of Truma? There's only one kind of Truma. The Truma is separated from the Kohen. That's only one kind of Truma. Oh, you want to say there's two kinds of Truma because it's one is wine and one is oil? Then in that case, it would be hundreds of kinds of Truma. So he said, what's the two kinds of Truma? Achas Truma Tehoira. One is Truma, which is ritually pure. What do I do with that truma?
We use it.
No, pure truma. What do I do with it? Pure, holy, good. What should I do with it? Huh? What is truma? What is it? No. What is truma? Can this be truma? This is styrofoam. Can this be truma?
No.
Why not? It's not food. Truma is an edible. So how do I benefit from normative truma?
Eat it.
I eat it. So the Torah says, achas, truma tahera. Achas. And another way is truma tmeya. But truma tmeya is not allowed to be eaten. How would I benefit from truma tmeya, from truma, which is ritually impure? What's the answer?
Getting rid of it.
By using it when it gets burnt. We all need energy. We all need things to burn. The coal industry is a big industry. Why? Because coal burning things, they produce energy. People saying today that coal is cleaner than other things. I have no clue what's cleaner than anything. Everything is so political today. Everything is an agenda and everything is a spin doctor. I don't know what's what anymore. But I do know that energy is a very important thing to have. Zu gesund. And in order to have energy, what do I need? Something to burn. That's how it is. Something's got to get destroyed to provide the energy. Something's got to get burnt. Because that's the only way we can release electrons. Electrons are embedded. You have another way. It's called nuclear physics.
No, it's called the sun. It's up there.
Yeah, harnessing solar power. Okay, very good. That's exactly the point of solar power. That is the technology of solar power. That we're saying we don't have to burn things on Earth. We can actually harness the natural light that was always there. And who knows? When we speak about the era of Mashiach, we speak about a time when the sun will be utilized in a very, very powerful way. And maybe this is a precursor presaging the coming of Mashiach, when the sun is now being harnessed. At any rate, the point being is that there is another way to benefit from material matter. One way to benefit from material matter is to burn it. How do you burn it? People burn calories. People burn it by consuming it. That's a form of incineration. In fact, when the Malachim, when the angels came to visit Avraham Avinu, it says they sat and ate. Since when can angels eat? They don't have intestines. They don't have the needs of normal human beings. So what were they doing with the food? So Rashi says, quoting our sages, Nireka Ichun, it looked like they were eating. It says, Hayasurfanes and Behevel Piem, they were vaporizing it. It was basically nuclear waste. They vaporize stuff. So it's also called burnt. It's a euphemism. So one way is burning it through eating it up. And the other way is burning it literally by burning it. And there's a lot of benefit in burning something. If you burn it right, you can utilize that energy. And the Gemara says this is a truma. You say this is the two trumas. This is a truma which is pure, a truma which is kosher, a truma which is holy, a truma which is eaten. And there's another kind of truma. And that's a truma which is not kosher. Because it's not pure, not ritually pure anymore. What do you do with that truma? The Torah comes along to you and says, you know what? It's shelcha. Va'ani, hine nisati lecha. I gave it to you. Can I give you something that you can't use? Yeah, of course I could, but can I say later I gave you a gift? And you say, well, you didn't really give me a gift. You gave me something I couldn't use. And what would I say? Well, of course you couldn't use it. I knew you couldn't use it, but I still gave it to you. So you never really gave it to me then. If you give somebody to something they can't use, did you really give it to them?
Well, you gave it to them, but...
You may physically have handed something to them. Did you give them anything? The answer is no. In order to be given something, I have to be able to benefit. God says, I gave you truma. Oh, thank you, God. That's very nice of you to give me truma, said the Kohen. And what exactly would you allow me to do with it? Oh, absolutely nothing, said God. But I gave it to you. You didn't give me a privilege. You didn't give me a gift. You gave me a responsibility.
Still a gift?
I don't know. That's not a gift of truma. That's a gift of a mitzvah. Here it says, "Vani hine nesati lecha es trumaisai." So if I gave you my truma, then it has to be lecha. It has to be for you. If it's going to be lecha, what's the only way it could be lecha?
You have to use it.
Do you know in which way it'll be called yours? Do you know in which way you'll be benefiting? Do you know in which way you'll be utilizing? Shalcha tehei. Last sika, that you can use it for purposes of incineration, but don't just burn it. That's a waste. Instead, burn it. La'asika. Tachas. Tavshilcha. Burn it under your... whatever you're cooking. Because whatever you're cooking needs to be cooked through heat. So Hashem says, I gave it to you. Somebody gives you firewood, that's called giving you something. This using bread for firewood is a waste of bread. Perhaps. Nobody will argue that. Perhaps. But it's still a use. When you have nothing to burn, people burn all kinds of strange things. So that's the answer. The Gemara says there was this perception, this assumption, that when I'm going to be burning something, I should not be able to benefit from it. And the Gemara says, wrong, it's a wrong perception. It's true, it's a mitzvah to burn it, and it's a mitzvah to get rid of it, but it doesn't mean you can't bask in the glow. You can bask in the glow. In fact, you can even cook by its heat. Okay, because it says truma isai, plural. And we darshan, we expound, there's a truma which is pure, that's eaten. There's a truma which is impure, and it's burnt, but it's still l'cha. It's still a gift, it's still for you. You can still utilize it. Got that? Answer number one. Now, the Gemara is usually not satisfied giving us one answer. The Gemara says, and in case you don't like that answer, in case you feel that's still falling short, the Iboyus Eima, and if you wish you could say, Midrebi Avohu. Okay, it's before we got Rav Nachman. Now we get Rabbi Avo. The Omer Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Avo said, Omer Rabbi Yechanan taught. It says, with regard to Maaser Sheni, V'loi biyarti mimenu betomei. I did not get rid of it when I was in a state of ritual impurity. So let me tell you about this mitzvah. There's a mitzvah in the Torah which is called Vidui Maaser. Many, many people don't know about this mitzvah because we haven't performed it in about 2,000 years. And that is a mitzvah that people who have land in the Holy Land, and many, many Jews, most Jews had land in the Holy Land, which means you're a farmer or some kind of farmer, aficionado of farming, even if you're not an actual farmer, but you're doing some kind of farming. So if you're doing some kind of farming, then you would be separating Truma and Maaser Sheni or Maaser Ani. You separate all these gifts. And you have to distribute these gifts. Because that's the responsibility Hashem gives a farmer, which ends up being by the time you finish, it's like over 20%. It has to be designated for one purpose or another. Okay, this is nice.
It's called income tax.
It's like income tax. Yeah. Only it goes to Hashem, and you actually get to direct it. You don't give it to the government, who gives it to terrorists over here. Over here, you pay your taxes, and the government pays terrorists $10 million for being terrorists. It puts common criminals in prison and throws the keys away. And terrorists, they give money, and they read them poems, and they hug them.
They sing kumbaya.
And sing kumbaya, and it's okay. It doesn't matter who you raped, or killed, or beheaded. Oh, don't even get me started. Okay, whatever. So. Going back to our point, the taxes, if you will, that you have to give, you decide who to give it to. Which Kohen gets it? Your friend, the Kohen. Which Levi gets it? The Levi you like. In fact, when it comes to giving it to the poor, you can even choose which poor person you give it to. The poor person can't say, I demand your Maaser. You demand. I'll give Maaser who I want to give Maaser to. Now, every 3 years, the land of Israel comes to a close of a cycle. You're probably more familiar with the seven-year cycle, but every 3 years, the land of Israel comes to its cycle because the first 2 years, we give gift to the Kohen, that's called Truma, gift to the Levite, that's called Maaser, and then we do something called Maaser Sheni, secondary Maaser. What happens with the Maaser Sheni? We bring it to the holy city of Yerushalayim. And what do we do with this food in the holy city of Yerushalayim? We make a party. And we invite friends and relatives. Yerushalayim was ever the place of farbrengens. Everybody was always farbrenging. Why? Because they came with food, and the food had to be eaten. And they came with wine, and oil, and all kinds of other things. And what would happen if you live far away? And many times the food that had been designated or set aside would not last until you're actually going to travel to Yerushalayim. You're going to bring rotten food to Yerushalayim.
You sell it.
You turn it into money. You liquefy it, so to speak. And then after you turn, make it liquid, you bring the cash too. Yerushalayim, and therefore people would come to Yerushalayim with wads of cash. And guess what happens when you have wads of cash that you have to spend in Yerushalayim on foodstuffs? What happens?
Good economy.
The economy booms. So Hashem made sure Yerushalayim should always have a good tourist economy. You always have people showing up with lots of money in their pockets, having to spend it all, and having to eat it there. So Yerushalayim was a place of good cheer. Yerushalayim was a place where people were happy, people didn't care to pay a little more, and everybody was spending the money, and they were eating and having parties and thanking Hashem. It was a glorious city, wonderful place. On the third year, the second Meiser doesn't go to Yerushalayim. The second Meiser on the third year goes specifically to your brother who is poor or sister who is poor. It's called Meiser Oni. Now, is it conceivable that over the years a person might start to build up a little bit of an arsenal of Truma or Meiser or Meiser Sheni or Meiser Oni? It's conceivable. You know, stuff happens. I wanted to give this to my cousin Herschel de Koyen, but Herschel de Koyen was away, and I don't like Tzvi de Koyen. I wanted to only give Herschel de Koyen. I don't know. Stuff happens, as you say, right?
But you have to have a transference.
So there has to be a certain point where, from here onward, you have to get rid of it. And when is that certain point? In the third year. When in the third year? This gets really interesting. When? Pesach. After Pesach. After the Yom Tov of Pesach. Why? It's on the second day of Pesach after Yom Tov. Why? Because even though the year's end for many things is Rosh Hashanah, when it comes to fruit,
economic year is Pesach.
When it comes to fruit, when it is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot? It's Tu B'Shvat. So that means that the Truma and Maisa of the third year of the fruit is not going to be given until after Tu B'Shvat. So now, at this point, everything's been separated. A Jew is supposed to show up in the Beis HaMikdash, and he's supposed to make a declaration before God. And what should he say? He says, "Dear God, I did what you asked of me. I come to the Beis HaMikdash to make the declaration. And in making this declaration, I am cleansed. My residuals are clean and purged of contraband that I had to get rid of, that I had to distribute. And from here I start the collections all over again." Understand? So when the Torah speaks about this, what does it say? It says, "V'loy biyarti mimenu b'tomei," which means, I did not destroy it when it was in a state of ritual impurity. Meaning, I did not benefit from it by burning when it was tomei, when I was tomei. So in other words, this food, this Maaser Sheni that we bring to Yerushalayim, can we benefit from it when it is tomei? The answer is no. Le'biyarti mimeni b'tomei. But if I could burn it, I could say, "Biyarti mimeni! I did get rid of it!" How'd you do that? You're not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni that becomes tomei. Simple, he says. I lit up. I kindled it. And it was great. It was a lit-up evening. I had so many lamps full of oil that were burning. But it says, "Le'biyarti mimeni." So the Torah says, "Le'biyarti," it says, "Mimenu." From Maaser Sheni, we cannot bask in the glow, but everything else you could. Le'biyarti mimenu b'tomei. Iyata mimenu, from it. The term is very exclusive. Mimenu iyata ma'avir. Avlata ma'avir shemen shol truma shenitma. But when it comes to shemen truma, different story. You got it? So truma I can benefit from. Maaser Sheni I can't benefit from. That's how the Gemara answers. Remember, let's go back. The question was, how in heaven do you know that you're allowed to benefit from the truma, which is contraband, which is prohibited, that has to be incinerated? How do you know you're allowed to bask in the glow? How do you know you're allowed to cook with its heat? How do you know you're allowed to use it? What's the answer? Because there's something called Maaser Sheni, and the Torah comes along and says, Lei biyarti mimenu. It wasn't used when it was in a state of ritual impurity. I did not use it in a state of ritual impurity. I did not use it. Mimenu. It. But other things were. And when the Torah comes along and specifies a specific material and say, Lebiarti mimenu, it doesn't say Lebiarti. It says Lebiarti mimenu. Since it's Lebiarti mimenu, that makes it exclusive. It's this and nothing else. And those are the two answers that the Gemara provides for us to prove and demonstrate that we may bask in the glow of the contraband that's being burnt in a state of ritual impurity. And if you think that's the end of the conversation, think again. But that conversation, with God's help, will continue next week.
Okay. Is this off? Have a look. I'm gone.